concrete and the less rest over of the wall. And we'll continue with English this week at Mahdi, and we'll see how will it go.
Mm.
So welcome to us.
Thank you.
And
hello, my name is Mahdi. I am a graduate student from NTNU, Trondheim. And after that, I started to be associate professor at High School Oslo Akershus. And my background is about the concrete and modeling and simulation of the concrete structures. And today and tomorrow, I'm going to speak about the concrete. And probably next week, also, I will continue this.
So I will leave the class and...
Yep. Thank you. So, today I'm going to speak about the framework condition by performing concrete work. First, before starting, do you have any problem to speaking English, or is it okay? Yeah,
because it's a... Maybe you can turn down the lights.
Yeah, if I could find it, yes. Yeah, thank you. In Høgskole Oslo Akershus, we are tier 4 teacher, which we teach in English, and then the students almost used to hearing English presentation. But I understand here I am the first person to speak English. And then I try to speak very slow, and not very slow, slow and simple. So, concrete structure. Before starting the presentation, I would like to mention that my references which I used in this presentation is one of the concrete technology book in NTNU, and also Beton Competence, and another book is Standard Norge. It's not a book, it's a site. There's a lots of codes on that. And also I used the several codes which I mentioned in the presentation. In each slide I mentioned the references. But the main references is Concrete Technology 1 from the NTNU. Let's start about speaking about the concrete. Why concrete and why we should focus on the concrete? You know that the concrete has a characteristic, very good characteristic, which is place of interest for us. And then we used a lot concrete in different type of the structure. For example, in Norway, the total consumption of the cement is approximately 1.5 million ton per year. It means that we should be completely familiar with the concrete, the behavior of the concrete, and the performance of the concrete structures. The performance of the concrete structure is a function of the environment. Fortunately or unfortunately, we made the concrete structures usually in a severe condition. For example, one of the structure which we have is a bridge. You can see we have several bridges in Norway and in other countries. And when we speak about the reinforced concrete bridge, it's important to focus on the durability of the concrete. Because if you see, for example, in the above picture in the right, you can see the column of the bridge is in the water. And in the water, we have a chloride. And when we have a chloride, then the first things come in our mind is corrosion due to the chloride. So it's important to know how to make the concrete, which the mixture of the concrete, and how to, for example, control the cover, how many centimeters should be the cover over the reinforcement to protect against the chloride penetration to the concrete. Because if the color from the water go to the concrete and reach the reinforcement, and then the problem for the reinforced structure will start, the corrosion will start. So it's important, there should be some regulation for the cover depth. And also the properties of the concrete, the mixture of the concrete, how much cement should be used, and the water ratio, water cement ratio, how much should it be, and also the other parameters. For example, we have some additive to the concrete. Which type of additive we should use in different environmental conditions. So if we focused on the safety of the structure, we should completely know the concrete and the behavior of the concrete. The other type of the structure we have is offshore structure. We have several offshore structures in Norway because Norway has oil, and then many of them are in the oceans, and they need to make the offshore platform in the oceans. Some years ago in Norway, there is a problem for one of the offshore structures, and they want to install it in the... one of the problem for the platform was collapsed when they are going to install it some years ago. And the problem was a very small problem in the design, and they forget or they ignore some small parameter in the design, and something bad happened in the structure. So it shows us when speak about the concrete structure or infrastructure, it is very important to even focused on the very small detail on the structures. So the other type of the structure I'm going to speak about that is the tunnels. In tunnels also we use the concrete structure, concrete. And the main part of the tunnel is concrete. It could be precast concrete or in situ concrete. And one of the method we used in the tunnel is using the shotcrete. We use the shotcrete method to splash the concrete to the wall. And if I want to show you the method for shotcrete, just... There's a small video clip here, and you can... Oh, there's no internet here. Is it a cable for internet? How should I send it to the screen?
Slide the video over the screen.
Yeah. Yes, 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 I got it. Thank you for information. That the shotcrete in the concrete to the wall, and at the same time they add the accelerator to the concrete, because when the concrete is attached to the wall it should be
quickly attached to the wall, and then they have to use the accelerator.
Let's come back to the presentation. So then this video show us that we can also use the fiber concrete and shotcrete it to the wall and make the tunnel. Or in other situation, we can also use the precast concrete to make the tunnels. So it's important to be familiar with different type of the concrete structure and different method of making the concrete structure. You can also use the concrete for dam and making the dams and also some other infrastructures. When we speak about the concrete in the large concrete, then we need to be familiar with additive material and admixture like pozzolan material and some plasticizer and super plasticizer, which I'm going to speak about it, not very in detail, just kind of the introduction in this presentation. The other type of the usage of concrete is using in the normal building. We can also use the concrete in the normal building, and there are several buildings in Norway and out of the Norway which use the concrete as a main material, because there is a lots of advantage of using the concrete. So I can show you a short clip again which use the precast concrete in the structures. I hope it's work. I don't know why they removed music, but probably there is some reason for that. So we put the framework and then add the concrete. And probably many of you are familiar with this method of making the concrete. But there is another method which all of these elements already made in the factory and just transferred to the site and attached together. there is some advantage for this method and disadvantage for this method. But the only thing is important, we should know which type of the concrete we should use and how to control the structure during the using of the structures. It could be a normal building, or could be offshore structure, or different, or even bridge and different type of the structures. The majority bridge in Norway has a problem of the corrosion and ASR. And if you are going to continue your education, it's a really interesting place to continue your education as a in master grad or even in PhD. So please stop it. I'm going to stop it and then. So the aim of showing this movie is show you that the concrete could be used in different type of the structure, small, big, and superstructures. But always there is a question. If you are owner of the bridge, the question is when this bridge is safe and when this bridge should be repaired and when I should completely destroy this bridge and replace the new one. This is a question, and the answer of this question is not very easy. You need to have a great knowledge about the material, about the analyses, and maybe one person couldn't answer this, and you should be a team. So if you speak with the company in Norway, Stadbergvesen, Multiconsult, and other companies, they are very interested to find the solution for this question. And if you say that I'm interested in this direction, I have a knowledge in this direction, probably they will be interested to work with you and use your knowledge. So because of that, I said that focusing on the or assessment of the residual concrete structure is one of the very interesting topic for companies and even for research. So when we speak about the concrete structure, the first parameters we think about is safety. And for the safety, we have two problems. One of them is the extreme forces, could be traffic loads or different type of the loads, dynamic loads, and even earthquake. And the other is a severe environment, which you can see, for example, for this road, salty water completely go through the concrete and then make a problem. If the concrete quality is not good, then we will have a very bad problem for this concrete. And then after this, we should have a knowledge about the deterioration process of the concrete, which next week we will go through the different type of the deterioration process and the deterioration type of the concrete, which problem the concrete structure could have and how we should distinguish the problem, different type of the crack, and also different sign we will understand, okay, this concrete has this type of the problem. And then we need to, we cannot just by looking at the concrete understand what's the problem. We need to do some test on that and then understand the problem and then suggest the solution. So the last part, deterioration and the solution, would be for next week. But today, I'm going to speak about the safety and durability today and tomorrow. So let's start, before going through the durability of the concrete, let's start with concrete. Concrete is a mixture of coarse aggregate, sand, cement, and water. We know that around 70% of the concrete is made from the aggregate. So if you look at this graph, It's a volumetric proportion. You can see the aggregate is the majority part of the concrete. And then we have a cement and cement paste. Around 30% is cement paste. In the aggregate, we have two different types of the aggregate. We have sand, which the diameter is the particle is smaller than 4 millimeters, could be defined as sand. And also, the coarse aggregate could be more than 4 or 8 millimeters. And the gravel is less than 8 millimeters. So we need to have a sand and gravel and then cement, water, and some admixture and mineral additive. So what's the difference between the admixture and additive? I will speak about this in the next slides. Before speaking about the additive, let's have a short discussion about the aggregate. Aggregate must be strong enough to cope with compressive strengths, because the majority of the compressive strengths suffer by aggregate. And aggregate attached to each other by cement paste. So we need to have a strong aggregate if we want to have a high compressive strength. And the other parameters is aggregate should be chemically inert, because if there is some chemical problem in the aggregate, then they will have a react with the cement. For example, ASR, alkali-silica reaction, is if we have a aggregate which have some chemical like silica on that, then we will have a problem for the concrete. And the aggregate also should be durable enough to resist the effect of the weather cycle and hard enough to resist the abrasion and wear. So it's important to have a very strong aggregate if you want to have a strong concrete. The other important parameter is water-cement ratio. Water-cement ratio, in this graph you can see that by increasing the water, by increasing the, here the water-cement is 40%, here is 55%, and here is 70%. You can see by increasing the water-cement ratio, the degree of hydration will increase. So what does it mean, the degree of hydration? It means that the majority of the cement react with the water, and we have a higher hydrated cement. Then it means that we have a higher quality of the concrete. But the other problem is if we increase the W water-cement ratio, we will have some other problem in the concrete. So it's not just one factor, and we say that, okay, if we increase it, the hydration increases, so it's really good concrete. We should focus then, we should consider different parameters. For example, another parameter which is very important is a function of the water-cement ratio is distribution of the pores and percentage of the pores in the concrete. Before speaking about the two different types of the pores, let's have a short speaking about the CSH, calcium silicate hydrate. When the cement and water react with each other, the production produced is called CSH. And this is the main product of the cement-water reactions, and they're responsible for high mechanical strength and make the concrete very hard. So CSH is a majority part of the concrete, and we would like to have a strong CSH gel. So, and then when we speak about the CSH, we have one type of the pores in the concrete, which name gel pores. The pore system consists of the space between the solid parts of the very fine CSH phase named gel pores. And gel pores is very, very small, and for example, it's around 2 nanometers. And the other type of the pores is capillary pores. The capillary pores is those part of the original water filled volume between the cement particle that did not fill up by hydration product. So when we have a hydrated product, there are some small pores on that which will fill with water, and this pore is named capillary pores. So the capillary pores, we would like to have a less capillary pores in our concrete and cement paste. After being familiar with this type of the pores, let's have a look at this graph. In this graph, we have a WC ratio, water-cement ratio, and the percentage of each material we have in the cement paste. For example, here, you can see that when WC ratio is around 41, then we don't have any unhydrate cement. But when the WC ratio is very low, 0.2, we have around 30% unhydrate cement. It means that we have cement which we couldn't use that in our concrete or cement paste. So it's important to find the best W cement ratio. And if, for example, focus on the 4%, you can see we have the large gel in the 4%, and it's around 70%. And the gel pores is here, and we don't have any capillary pores. It means that this ratio is very favorable for us, because the percentage of capillary pores, this area, is zero here. But if, for example, I increase the WC ratio, and then say that if I increase this, then the hydration product will increase, but you can see that the capillary pore will increase here, and it's around 50% or 60% of the concrete. So increasing the WC ratio is not favorable at all. We should find the best ratio. So this graph shows us the importance of the water-cement ratio when we are going to speak about the durability of the concrete, because if we have lots of pores in our concrete, then additional ions could easily go through the concrete and make the problem for the concrete and for the reinforcement. So knowing this knowledge and being familiar with this graph will help us to find the best water cement ratio and mixture of the concrete. So what's the difference between the admixture and additive? We already mentioned that we will have an admixture and additive in our concrete. Admixture are chemical agents added in a small dosage that is less than 5% of weight of cement. But additive you use larger, and then the percentage could be around 30% or 40% of the cement. So for the additive, for example, we can mention that fly ash or silica fume and other additive which influence on the concrete. And the question is why we should use the additive in our concrete. Do you have any idea about this? There are several reasons for that we are interested at least to use the additive and replace it with cement. The first thing is producing the cement is not green and environmental, favorable for environmental condition. It's produced a lot of pollution. And then we would like to reduce the amount of the cement usage in the world. And then one of the way to reduce this is using the additive. The other problem is when we use the cement, hydration process of cement produce lots of heat. And in the first minutes and first hours, we will have a really high temperature in the concrete. And somehow it's good, but in somehow it should be controlled. And when we reduce the amount of the cement and replace it with some other pozzolans, then you can control the temperature of the hydration process. In addition, silica fume and fly ash are very small materials, and then it could completely fill the small pores and increase the quality of the concrete. So there's a lots of advantage of using this, but the question is, which percentage is favorable for us? 30%, 20%, or 10%? Today or maybe tomorrow, we are going to speak about this in the codes and in the standard, which percentage suggested to use and replace with the cement. So we have to be familiar with the codes. If we are going to design the structure, we cannot individually make concrete and say that we are sure that this concrete is really good. We have to follow the code. And there are several codes, and today I'm going to speak about the codes and how we should follow the codes and which code is related to which part. Just general knowledge about this. Accelerator is another factor we could add to the concrete, and it speed up the hydration and make the hydration process faster. And the advantage of use is, for example, in the very cold environment, which the hydration process could be affected by the temperature of outside, we need to make it faster. Then we can use the accelerator to make the hydration process faster. And also, chloride accelerator have been banned as they attack the reinforcement. So it could be completely clear that we are not allowed to use the chloride accelerator, because coloring the concrete means that we are going to destroyed or concrete. And also we have a retarder. Retarder slow down the hydration process. And it's good to know that sugar is a kind of the retardant. And the retarder used, for example, in a very warm environment, which we would like to hydration process slowly proceed to completely cement and water react with each other. Or even sometimes you need to transfer the concrete in a far, for example, in the towers, you are going to send the concrete to top, and then you need retarder. Because if the process of hydration starts, then in the middle of the way, the concrete, we made the concrete that we don't have any fresh concrete. And the other things we should be familiar with that is air entrainment. We know that when concrete go through the very very cold condition and freeze and thaw happen in the concrete, then the concrete, the water in the concrete like to increase the volume, and this increasing in the volume of water leads to internal crack, creating the internal crack in the concrete, and then concrete is spalled off. So we need to have some small void in the concrete. When the water wants to increase the volume, directly go through that void. And at that time, we use the air in the concrete, bubble in the concrete. So this material causes a small air bubble in the concrete and used in the severe extreme hot and cold condition, and reduce damage caused by freeze and thaw. And the reason I describe you, because there is a location for the water, expanded water. But you should be careful about that. When you increase the void in the concrete, then the concrete strength will reduce. So there is a limitation of percentage of the void in the concrete, and we should follow that limitation when we are going to design or a mixture of the concrete. And there is another material we add to the concrete. This is a plasticizer. Plasticizer increases workability of the concrete. The advantage of the plasticizer, it could be kind of the liquid we add, very small liquid we add to the concrete, and the concrete flow very easy. And this helps us to reduce the water-cement ratio. And if you reduce the water-cement ratio by using the plasticizer, then the compressive strength of concrete will increase because you reduce the water-cement ratio. So when we speak about the plasticizer, it's increase the workability of the concrete. Concrete is completely flow and easily moved through the different rebars, and the workability will increase. And reduce the amount of the water, because some percentage of water is for workability of the concrete, to make the concrete flower. And then when you use the plasticizer, the water, we can reduce the amount of the water. And when we reduce the water, the strength of the concrete, the compressive strength of the concrete will increase. So plasticizer is very helpful for the concrete, and then we should know where and how we should use that. And many companies which produce the plasticizer suggest the percentage of that, because it's completely function of the type of the plasticizer. Then they had done several tests and suggested which percentage you should use in your concrete. Or even if you are you can do your test and find the compressive strength of the concrete yourself in the laboratory. And also, I'm going to speak about the concrete consistency. In the Norwegian standard and EN206 part 1, they speak about the slump test. By a slump test, that many of you probably are familiar with that, you can understand the consistency of the concrete and evaluate that. And it's important to know that this test helps you to understand which problem you have in your fresh concrete. Different type of the failure you will have, shear failure or just completely collapse. So by this test and by this regulation which mentioned here, you can understand the consistency of your concrete. I put the short video of this test here, but probably we could have a short break, and then after the break we can continue. Okay. Let's see this short clip. I hope you haven't seen that already.
The ease with which one can work with concrete is called workability. This can be measured using a simple test called the slump test. Let me show you the procedure. Slump cone test is a simple and popular test extensively used at sites to assess the workability of the concrete mix. The test should be conducted at the commencement of the concreting operations or whenever the workability of the concrete changes. The apparatus for conducting the slump test essentially consists of a metallic mold in the form of a frustum of a cone with a base plate. A steel tamping rod of 16 mm diameter and 60 cm height is to be used for compacting. The internal surface of the mold should be thoroughly cleaned of moisture and any hardened concrete before commencing the test. The mold is placed on a smooth, horizontal, rigid and non-absorbent surface. It is then filled in four layers, with the thickness of each layer being approximately 1/4 of the height of the mold. Each layer should be tamped 25 times evenly using the rounded end of the tamping rod such that strokes are uniformly distributed over the cross-section. After the top layer is tamped, the concrete is leveled with a trowel so that the mold is filled exactly to the top. The mold is then removed by raising it gradually. The concrete will subside. This subsidence is known as slump. This operation shall be carried out without any jerks or vibrations and within a period of 2 minutes after completion of final tamping. The difference in level between the height of the mold and that of the highest point of the subsided concrete is measured. The subsidence measured is the slump of the concrete. The slump may either be a true slump, a shear slump, or a collapsible slump. The true slump is the desired form of slump that we require. In harsh mixes, the concrete slides down in an inclined plane. This is known as shear slump. In collapse slump, the concrete collapses as soon as the cone is removed. It usually occurs in very wet mixes. The concrete demonstrating a shear or collapse slump is considered unsatisfactory. In case of slump results beyond the specified limits, the mix proportion needs to be adjusted, especially the water content. The slump can also be varied by changing the proportion, size, and combination of the various sizes of the aggregates. It is advisable to assess the workability of concrete mix using a slump cone. Ensure that the cone is filled in a proper manner as indicated. Notice the type of slump. Shear and collapse slump are undesirable. Adjust the slump to the desired value by changing the proportion.
Yes, and this is a summary of a slump. I think you are familiar with that, but just a very quick review. And then let's come back to the slides. Okay. So, assume that we have a bridge, and in this bridge we have some problem. The problem could be some crack in the deck, or for example, some displacement or some inclination in the column and some other problems, or corrosion or lack of vibration or foundation settlement, and different type of the problem we could have for a bridge. You as an engineer should be able to distinguish these problems. Then we need the flow chart for monitoring and assessing the structures. There is a method for civil structure health monitoring which named CSHM. In this method, we use the different type of the equipment to monitor different problem in the structure. So the problem, as I said, could be cracking, settlement, deflection, or other type of the problems. In this monitoring method, we have a time strategy. For some problem, we should have a short-term monitoring, and for some other problem, we should have a long-term monitoring. The long-term monitoring could be completely continuous or could be periodic. So it's again depends on function of the type of the problem. I just want to know that you know that there are the strategy for this method, and already some codes suggested the monitoring of the structures. And also you should focus on the condition and condition strategy. In condition strategy, you need to have some, in some part, global monitoring and in some part local monitoring. For example, if you have some crack here or some sign here that there is a problem here, then it's not necessary to do the global monitoring and spend lots of money. Then you have to focus on that point. Also, loads effect could be monitored statically or dynamically. Statically is for deflection, settlement, crack widths, and dynamic could be for higher sample rate. So this is a short introduction of the monitoring method. I don't want to go through the detail of the monitoring. Let's start the second part of the today presentation. And in the second part, we are going to speak about the standards and codes. In the standards, when we are going to design and execute the concrete structure, we have a different type of the standards. And we have to follow the standards. The point for the standards is all the standards are under continuous updating. And then we have to be updated and we have to check the new version of each standard. And also you should know that some project could be solved without using the standard. In some specific case, maybe we couldn't find any suggestion in the standard. But it's important in this case, we document and write the report and all detail for our decisions. But if we are going to do that, it may lead to the comprehensive work, and it's easier to follow the standard if it is possible. So let's have a quick review in famous standard in Norway and in Europe, which is related to the concrete. The first one, which many of you are familiar with, that is NSEN 1990, basis of a structural design. It's the general rules of the design, and for NOSK, their Grundlag for Projectering of Construction, and Eurocode 0 is the Norwegian. And probably many of you already use this in different courses. And after Eurocode 0, we have Eurocode 1. In the Eurocode 1, we speak about the loads and different type of the loads and different factors for the steel and concrete structures. We are going to familiar with that in this code, Eurocode 1. And på norsk der laster på konstruksjoner. And the other code related to concrete structure, the first and second one is for general for all type of the structure. But Eurocode 2 or 1992 is only for design of the concrete structure, which the most important part is part 1.1, general rules for buildings. And when you're going to design the concrete structure, the majority of the steps are presented in Eurocode 2. Even if you are going to design the pre-stress and precast concrete, there are some suggestions in Eurocode 2. However, there are some other blocks in Norway we can use for precast concrete. The other code is NS3420, a specification text for building, construction and installation. And in Norwegian you can read, or maybe I can also read, beskrivelse tekster for bygg, anlegg or og installationer. These standards contain a large number of the parts, and part L cover the concrete. So this is not mandatory to use this standard, but you can use as an assistant and guide for a standard. And there is another standard which is related to the concrete, is NSEN 13670, execution of concrete structure, in Norwegian Utførelse av betongkonstruksjoner. And there is another one, NSEN 206 part 1 concrete. Part 1 is related to the concrete specification, performance, production and conformity of the concrete. So this is also is related to the European, and there is a national annex for Norwegian at the end of this. So you can see we have several codes, and when we are going to control and design the structure, we should know how to handle all of these codes and start from where and in which direction continue that. So we need the flowchart and we need the framework of using the structure when we are going to plan and build the structures. So here in this slide, we can see that framework of the codes and standards. In for example, when we are going to planning and build the structures, the first code, as I already mentioned, is using the Eurocode 1919. And this is just basic general rules about the design. And then after that, we go through the loads in Eurocode 1991. And after that, from this point, all of them is related to the concrete. Before that, it's general. And from here to the down, all of them is related to the concrete. First, we use the 1992 Eurocode 2, and then we can use here NS3420. A specification text is a kind of helping tools. It's not the code, and it's not mandatory to use that. Because of that, they use the dashed line here. And then after that, we have a 13670 execution of the concrete structure. And depend on the type of the structure we have, it's a concrete, it's a reinforcing steel, or prefabricate element, or steel for reinforcement of concrete, we can select different type of the standard and focus on the detail if we need some more information in our calculation. And at the end, we have product standard, text standard, and control standards. It's important to know and be familiar with the standard. When you are going to design the structure, it's not necessary to completely memorize all steps in the standards. It is important to know in which part of each standard you can find the information. For example, if you are going to design the small element of concrete element, you should know this concrete element is a precast concrete, pre-stress concrete element, or normal concrete element. And if I want to design the normal, which part is related to shear, which part is related to the moment and other parameters, and which code I can find the information about this. And after that, you can easily find the code and follow the step. But you should have a general knowledge about the difference between the standards. But for each of these standards, there are lots of information. If you be graduated and be an engineer, it doesn't mean that you completely know Eurocode 2 or Eurocode 3 or Eurocode 1 and 0. You should just know the rules, how to, you know, the surface of that and how to go in detail. So the aim of introducing this standard is you find the direction. For example, if I want to find some information related to the, for example, RCC concrete or self-compacting concrete, which standard is appropriate for that? So general rules is important, not only in this course and not only in this part. Clever and successful people knows the general and know the direction and then focused on the detail. So try to understand the first point and the last point of the path and then start and then find the detail during the path. So let's read some sentences about each standard. NS3420 is a specification text in is a kind of helping tools. Technical requirements are covered by NSEN, but here we just have a Norwegian standard, and in this standard is not the technical requirement is not included in NS3420. Few countries have a standard like this, and there is no European standard covering the same area. NS3420 will therefore survive in a system of European standard, but it's not necessary to follow this standard. So you should know that this is just only the helping tools. If in some part you have some more, you need some help, you can focus on and read this standard. Another standard is NSEN 13670 is communication information for design to the contractor and what choices that have taken on material construction. It's a kind of execution standard, how to handle, how to manage the concrete structures. By following this requirement, higher up in the system are fulfilled with design assumption in Eurocode 1992, Eurocode 2. And if you come back to the previous slide, you can see in the last part we have some product standard test and control standard. And here we mentioned some of them, that the lowest in the three contain other product standard like NSEN 197 for cement or for fly ash, for admixture, for mixing water, aggregate, and for silica fume. For each of them, there is a separate standard, and you can use this to find the information in these codes. So, if we want to control the structures, then we have to focus on two part of the structure. First, design, and then execution. So it's important during the design process we have some control method, and during the execution we have some control method as well. So design supervision level, named DSL, and it's only for during the design process, and inspection level, IL, is during for execution. We have a different level of DSL and IL, DSL 1, 2, 3, and 4, IL 1, 2, 3, and 4. It depends on the importance of the structure. We have a different type of the supervision and inspection. So please be familiar with these two. I'm going to use it in the table. So DSL means design supervision level in the design level, and IL is for execution level. And you can find this in the EN19, EN, Eurocode 0. And also we have a different form of the control. According to the codes, we have a different type of the control, different form of the control. The first one and the easiest one is a self-checking or self-inspection. In this one, this form of control, the designer and or the person who execute this structure or made the structure could check the structure, could inspect the structure. So we can understand that this structure, this is the easiest way of controlling of the structure. And the other and second level of the form of the control is internal system control, systematic control. For example, it could be a colleague checking. If you made or designed a structure, you can ask your colleague to check your design, or it could be some internal systematic control. And sometimes they mentioned it's colleague checking. And the last form of the control is independent control. It could be extended control by other colleagues or third party independent control. We ask another company to control your design or your structures. So we use different, each of this form of control for different type of the structures. How we could distinguish for each structure we need which of this form of control? Then we should be familiar with some more definition. The first one is consequence level class. Consequence class, in the first table, it's in Norwegian and this is in English. In the consequence class, we have three classes, class 3, 2, and 1. Class 3 is a high consequence for loss of human. You can see that some example here, public building or other type of the structures, which is important for us. And the other is a medium consequence. And the first one is low consequence. For example, agricultural building or the building which is not very important for us. So for each of this structure, we could use different form of control. For example, when I speak about the agricultural building, it's not necessary to use the third-party independent control. Self-checking could be enough for this type of the structure. I will show you the table of the codes and how to use this consequence class and control this. And the other parameters we should be familiar with that is reliability class. For reliability class, again, we have a three level. Also, you should know that in some part they mentioned the fourth level due to the importance of that. For example, in the previous one, we have also CC4, but it's not necessary to know about that. In the reliability level, we have three level. And what's the reliability? The probability of failure, if the structure is very important, we would like to reduce the probability of failure of these structures. And then we have a beta factor, reliability index. And based on that, we could understand the importance of failure of structures. So the general is we have three level, and in each level, level three is very important, and level one is less important the structures. So we have two factor and low battery. So you could have a 30-second break, and then I will continue. You can speak to each other. Enjoy 30 seconds of your time. Okay? Let's come back to the course. So far, we understand we have a three level of the control. Three level for design and three level for execution. And also we have a three class, consequence class, and three reliability class. And if I found the relation, you can see here, we have a three reliability class and three consequence class. And these are directly directly related to each other. We can say that if I wanted to divide the control class in three level, level 1, 2, and 3, then I can say that in the next slide, I can say that control class 1 could be related to the consequence class 1 and reliability class 1. Control class 2 with the related CC and RC, and control class 3 with related CC and RC. So we have three control class, and based on the importance of the structure, we can understand which class is important for us. So we have a table here. In this table, it's from Eurocode 0. We have a control class here, A, 1, 2, 3, or B and U, it's the Norwegian name, abbreviation of that. And then for level 1, we have CC1 and RC1, level 2, CC2, RC2, and level 3, CC3, RC3. And then we have a design and execution. And this is a different type of the control. If I have a concrete in level 1, then I know that this structure in level 1, know that this structure is not very important. So it's mentioned that control class for design should be self-checking. And self-checking is required. The other is not required, is not important. So for unimportant structure or less important structure, only self-checking for design and self-checking for execution. But for second one, for the second control class, we have to have a checking and also colleague control, DSL2 and IL2. This is important. And for very important structure, we have to have all of them, checking control, calling control, and ask another company to control that. So this is the Eurocode suggestion. And there is a 2 point here. Here it's mentioned that there is a footer here in the next slide. For a structure with the material is very important. For example, we need the high strength concrete or we need the special material, then we should consider this as a crevice or as a required. And here also, you can see that for prefabricated product, the design according to this, if it's controlled based on the Eurocode, it means that it's not necessary to control by third party. Anyway, the detail is not important. You can read the detail, but generally understanding this table is important. How to use this table? Just as a quick review, we have a three level control level, A, 2, 3. A is less important, 3 is higher important. And for each level, it's suggested for design and for execution, different type, form of the control. Self-control, colleague control, independent control. And then based on the type of the structure, consequence level and the RC level, you can find the form of the control. And this form of the control shows in the pyramid. You can see, if I want to show you here, here is level 1, here is level 2, and here is level 3. For level 1, we only need self-checking for both design and execution. Only self-checking, the blue one. For level 2, At first we need self-checking, and then we need colleague checking. So we need both of them. And for level 3, we need self-checking, colleague checking, and independent control by third-party control, a company. So this is not complicated, but you cannot find this information in any other courses. It's important to sit here and then understand the general overview of this material, because I don't think in the other courses anybody give you this information. Maybe this information is not very important, but it's important to know that how to systematically control the structures, because if you want to do that, you have to follow the codes. And if I want to summarize for design and for execution. For design, we understand that the form 1, DSL1, self-checking, meaning that the person or team performing the design shall check the design. So one person or one team which designed the structure could control the structure. When the structure is in the class 2, then we have to use the DSL2 or colleague check, and also DSL1 or self-checking. So for a structure in the level 2, we have to do level 1 and level 2 of the checking. And for a structure in the level 3, we have to do all of them. If you check the pyramid, you can see that the structure here should start from here, self-checking, colleague checking, and independent checking. And at the end, it's mentioned for a structure in level 3, we have to control all of them. This is for design, and for execution also, it means that the person or the team which work and made the structure could control and should be control the structure yourself, well, or herself, when the structure is in the level 1 or class 1 of the importance. And when the structure is in the control class 2, then we have to use the colleague check or internal systematic check. And when the structure is the class 3, we have to use the independent inspection. Just to review how we understand the control class 1, 2, or 3. It's the function of the reliability class and consequence class. And reliability class and consequence class is a function of the importance of the structure. Summary of this text is that if the structure is important, it's in level class 3, and if it's not important, it's level class 1. And for each one, we can understand from this pyramid which type of the control is necessary. This is an unimportant structure, and this is an important structure. You understand for important structure, we have a 3 different control. But for unimportant, we just have one level and self-checking. And this, you shouldn't forget that this checking for DSL and IL, it means that it's for design and for execution. So you can see that supervision class for design and inspection class for execution should be checked by based on this method. So, and then here the speaking about the control of the structure is finished. But today and tomorrow we are going to continue this subject, but not directly using the standard. We are going to continue and shift the presentation to the durability of the concrete structure. You know that when we speak about the concrete structure, always the problem is how we should check and make a durable concrete structures. So we should understand the standard suggestion for different situation. For example, if I have a building in the chloride environment and the level of the chloride attack to the concrete is different, how can I classify the concrete? And if I have a several bad situation. For example, I have a chloride and I have a sulfate and other problem, freeze and thaw. How should I handle and how should I classify based on this standard? Classify the structure based on this standard. This is the concept that tomorrow I'm going to speak about that. And we went through the code and understand for each type of the environmental or severe condition, which suggestion presented in the code. And then classify the structure based on the environmental condition and find the, for example, level of the cover of the concrete and other suggestions. For example, how many silica fume or fly ash we can use in concrete admixture or other suggestion based on the environmental we can find in the code. So I can start it right now or tomorrow. We have 10 minutes or 7 minutes time. What's your tomorrow preference? Always tomorrow, yes? Yeah. Have a nice day or a